colleagues. Before we can open a work session. If you are out there and a member, we need one of you to begin work this morning.
Can we do the public hearing on 469?
That's good. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 469.
Okay, they're looking for members.
There's Tony.
Always helpful.
Chair. Dr. Yates, good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rich Yates with Legislative Revenue. Senate Bill 469-2 is a gut and stuff, essentially, of the bill. What it does is to increase the fee for obtaining an identification device in connection with the weight mile tax from $5 to $8, and it reduces fees for registration cards, plates, and stickers, and makes it clear that these fees do not pyramid. The bill takes effect on January 1, 2004.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's see. Bob Russell and Mr. Marsh. You thought you were done.
I did.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Morning.
Mike Marsh from ODOT and Bob Russell from Oregon Trucking Associations. Both up here at the same time. You don't see us all the time, so... We're glad to be here today to explain Senate Bill 469. Senate Bill 469, with the amendments, allows us to align the statutes with House Bill 2041, the Transportation Funding Package. When preparing to implement House Bill 2041, we discovered that we had not been following the letter of the law correctly when it came to collecting registration plate and tax identifier fees for in-state trucking firms. We confirmed our findings with the Department of Justice and have been collecting three separate fees, or should have been, we have been collecting three separate fees, but combining these activities into one transaction is what we have done. The consequence of the finding, when combined with 2041, is an increase for in-state motor carriers of $13. The intent of 2041 was an increase of $3. What the bill does is to allow us to implement 2041 as intended. The bill reduces the $7.50 plate fee to $2.50 and specifies that the fee includes a registration cab card and validating sticker. The bill also changes the fee charged to Oregon carriers for a weight receipt and tax identifier from $5 to $8. Currently, Oregon-based carriers pay a $7.50 plate fee when they register a truck, and for that, they receive a truck license plate, a validating sticker, a registration cab card, and weight receipt and tax identifier. Carriers based in another state don't pay for the plate fee because they get that from the other state, which is their base state. What we need to do is make sure the carriers based in other states pay a $5 fee for the weight receipt and tax identifier credential, which is needed for the weight mile tax process. House Bill 2041 authorizes a $3 increase for the weight mile, for the weight receipt and tax identifier, and the increase is simple to implement when issuing a weight receipt to an out-of-state carrier, but for the in-state carrier, we have to implement the increase that the bill shows, and the fee for that credential needs to be separated from the $7.50 plate fee. To summarize, Mr. Chair, the bill allows us to implement 2041, ensuring that there's equity between in-state and out-of-state motor carriers, and ensures that the cost responsibility occurs between trucks and cars. Mr. Chair, open to questions, or we can go to Mr. Russell if you like.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob Russell, President of the Oregon Trucking Associations. I would just want to assure you that we totally support this. It's the fix that's necessary to implement what we thought we were doing in House Bill 2041. It's essential to my industry that we make sure that we take care of this, and we strongly support it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, will the trucker stop at the port of entry, and like they're coming from back east, as an example, and don't have this sticker or this item on, will then they stop at the port of entry and purchase the sticker?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannan, that's one way that they could, it's not a sticker that the out-of-state guys get. They just get a piece of paper, which is the weight receipt. And that's the credential that went from $5 to $8 under House Bill 2041. They can obtain those either at the port of entry, and they can obtain them via fax by calling ODOT. ODOT's open 24
hours.
Calling ahead. They're open 24 hours, 7 days a week, so they can obtain them that way. There's a variety of delivery mechanisms to make sure that they're available.
But there won't have to be, if I'm a trucker and I pull into a port of entry station, I won't have to wait 8 hours or 10 hours until the port of entry opens up to buy my sticker.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannan, no, you can obtain it 24/7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 469?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Close public hearing. Open the works on Senate Bill 469.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 469.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 469. Discussion. Any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Senate Bill 469 as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 469 as amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Any objections? Order. Senator Metzger and Starr, you want to co-chair or
not that significant much, so Senator Starr can carry it.
Okay, Senator Starr will be our carrier on that bill. Open a work session on House Bill 2283. Long time no see, Mazin. We've had this bill before us before.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we did, and this was sent back to us from the floor, the Senate floor. This is the bill that deals with the Myrtle Creek Golf Course being irrigated by sewage effluents and managed by a non-profit corporation that leases from the city or the municipality. And in the previous session, in the 1999 session, it received a tax waiver for property of the land. However, that process left the structures not included in that exemption. So this bill is to expand it to do so.
Thank you. We're in work session on House Bill 2283.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Early.
Move House Bill 2283 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farrelly has moved House Bill 2283 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Tara, would you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 It is an aye. Motion carries. Senator Fisher will carry the bill. Open a work session on House Bill 3183. We have a dash 2, a dash 7, a dash 4, and a dash 3. Senator Hannan, do you want to talk about your amendment first?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the dash 2 amendments are being handed out right now. This is the amendments that deals with Longview Fiber Company. The amendment originally would have applied possibly to as much as three or four different timber companies. The amendment, the dash two amendment, is drafted in such a way as to narrow the scope and definition down in the fact that it would only apply to basically one timber company in the state that does business. That's Longview Fiber Company. If you'll notice in Section 3, Sub 2 on the amendments, Section Sub A, notwithstanding subsection 1 of this section, the business income of taxpayer that is in the forest products industry and that owns and manages 300,000 or more acres in this state but less than 400,000, and that narrows the definition down to one company. This is the Longview Fiber Company amendment, and I would urge the members to adopt this amendment to the bill. And I would so move.
Can we hold off on the motion until we go through all the amendments?
All right.
Elizabeth, can you talk about the dash threes, the dash fours, and the dash sevens?
Yes. Senator Chairman Deckard and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar, Legislative Revenue Office. So with your dash three amendment, what this is basically doing is it's not deleting the original bill or anything. It's just adding the components of Senate Bill 549A, which you all heard and passed to the House, which increases the maximum payroll tax rate for mass transit districts by 0.1% of the wages paid of each employee. Then it specifies that the district board may adopt an ordinance increasing the tax authority if the economy in the district has recovered from the recent economic downturns as reflected in the regional employment and income growth. So this is beginning in January 1st, 2004. It sunsets the 10-year phase-in period of the payroll tax increase on January 2nd, 2014. It limits the annual increase to just 0.02%. Now, the revenue numbers are there on the revenue impact statement, and this is, again, not deleting the original bill, so you have the impact from increasing the sales factor in the corporate apportionment formula to 90% and then eventually to 100%. This appears to be the exact same language that is in the dash 2 with Senator Hannon's amendment. Senator Hannon's amendment does delete the original bill, and then it incorporates Longview Fiber's component in it, but the revenue impact for the dash 2 for that aspect would be the same. I just have to consider in there Longview Fiber's component for the dash 2. But with the mass transit component, then what you have here is then additional revenue for TriMet Mass Transit District and the Lane Mass Transit District of roughly $6 million for TriMet, the 0305 biennium, $681,835 for Lane Mass Transit, and that goes up in the outer years. In 0507 TriMet, it's $20 million, and Mass Transit, it's $2.2 million, and in 0709 it's $37.2 million for TriMet and $4.2 for Lane. So that's basically what the dash 3 is. It's bringing in Senate Bill 549A with the payroll tax increase. Now, and again, that is just an addition, add-on to the original bill. Now, with the dash 4 amendment, this is basically going in and deleting the original bill. Then it just, it eliminates the super sales apportionment formula going to 100% altogether. Then it implements an expansion of the R&D credit. And what it's doing is it eliminates the limitations on the fields of qualified and basic research under current law. Under current law, there's a limitation in the fields. You can only have do research in advanced computing, advanced materials, biotechnology, electronic device technology, environmental technology, or straw utilization. And then what else the bill does with the R&D credit is it increases the maximum amount of the credit per business each year. So under current law, the cap is $500,000. This is increasing it to $1 million. And this applies, everything applies beginning on or after July 1st, 2005. So there is no impact in the 0305 biennium. It's also eliminating the sunset date on the R&D credit that is under current law. The current law sunset date is January 1st, 2008. So the revenue impact on this portion, on this bill with the dash 4, the standalone R&D expansion bill, would be $48.4 million in the 0507 biennium. Of the static, and then just incorporating some of those feedback effects, you would roughly the reduction would be $44 million. In the 0709 biennium, it would be a total static and dynamic impact of $107 million. So that's your dash four. That is the R&D credit standalone bill. Then with your dash seven amendments, what this is doing is basically this is the same as the existing bill. It's just instead of deleting the original bill that you have in dash four, it just adds this R&D credit expansion to the existing bill in the dash seven. So dash seven does not delete the existing bill. It just adds the expansion of the R&D credit. And so you just have the revenue impact of the existing bill, which I haven't really said, for expanding the super sales factor. Again, we're as of May 2003, we moved to an 80% sales factor. This bill is increasing it to 90% sales and eventually 100% sales. And that is going to begin May of 2005. There is no revenue impact on the existing bill for the expansion of the sales factor in the 03-05 biennium, but there is in the outer biennium. So in the 05-07 biennium, it's a loss of $10.9 million and $23.3 million in the 07-09 biennium.
Thank you. So what would it be accurate on the R&D that this links to the federal definition and bumps the cap to 1 million. Is that essentially the...
Chairman Decker, that's correct. Yes, it's basically under federal law, there is not these limitations that we have under current law for the type of research. And so this would be consistent with that. And then it's increasing it to 1 million versus 500,000.
Thank you. Questions for Lizbeth?
Mr. Chair, just how does this all, with all these amendments, yeah, some deletions that delete the whole bill, some don't, how do we sort all this out?
The ones, Senator Nelson, that I believe are most strongly under consideration are the dash twos, Senator Hannon's amendments, the dash threes, which we're going to hear from TriMet, and then the dash sevens, which keep the existing bill but add the R&D to the existing bill. Mr. Hansen, Ms. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Fred Hansen, General Manager of TriMet. What you have before you, as described, is the exact language from Senate Bill 549, which you passed on the Senate floor on March 20th. There are no changes. Briefly, what it does is it raises by 0.1%, phased in over a 10-year period, the currently authorized payroll tax, the maximum payroll tax that may be levied by a mass transit district, in our case, TriMet. What that does is it allows us to be able to access up to $400 million of federal discretionary, what they call New Starts dollars, to be able to be utilized for building mass transit systems. There is a three-legged stool that is what the federal government evaluates projects by to grant those discretionary dollars. The first leg is that the project must deliver ridership, it must be connected to the land use patterns in an area, a whole series of things that we always score exceedingly high on. Number two, the second leg of that stool is that there must be local dollars to be able to match the federal dollars for the construction of the activities. Those things are something that we would do locally and have been working on for projects and have done very successfully. But the third, and what this legislation addresses very importantly, is that we must demonstrate to the federal government that we have 20 years of operating revenue to operate that which they would help build. Without that operating revenue, they don't want to see something sit idle and reasonable. So, we have been working very hard on this, as you have handed out to you, a long list of business representatives that have been supportive. But even before George Pasador, our board president, and I visited most of those members of the business community, we looked internally at TriMet to make sure we saved every dollar we could in our current operations. We have saved now $13.5 million annually by making sure that we did things smarter, but not lowering in iota any of the service that we delivered on the street. That then allowed us to be able to go to those members of the business community, and they have been very supportive. And if my board president were here today, he would tell you that it's not often that the business community says, yes, do tax me more, because I think of the benefit, both in terms of economic development as well as the service to the community, is so important. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Senator Stark.
Thank you. The dollar amount of federal funds that are on the table, that are maybe at risk in the event that this bill doesn't make it through the process, can you talk a little bit about that and what that means to the Portland economy?
Yes. Chairman, Senator Starr, right now the Congress is debating the reauthorization, so I have to be a little bit speculative, but it is anticipated that the dollar amount would be over a six-year window, and that is how the federal transportation reauthorizations occur. We would expect that we would be in line for approximately $400 million of federal discretionary dollars. Those would be matched by local dollars for the building of projects. In addition to that, there are substantial private investments that occur along, particularly our light rail alignments, but also are in fact adding to that overall economic activity. We expect that there would be somewhere around 6,000 jobs created over this next reauthorization period by those federal dollars. Again, I would stress very strongly that we then work very hard to make sure that those dollars are in fact spent locally on our current interstate max alignment of the $350 million project. About $250 million were spent in-state with both in direct employment as well as contracting.
Fred, one thing that didn't get mentioned that I think is important, I think we all know it, is that in no way are we imposing, we are just allowing. It's permissive, not in any way in a position on your board or the citizens of any of this areas.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely right. I should have mentioned that. This is merely granting the authorization to the TriMet board. They would need to go through all the normal processes for adopting such an ordinance that would be subject to all the local protections that are for any ordinance that would be adopted by the TriMet board. The same would apply in Lane County.
Thank you. Ms. Clark?
I don't have anything to add. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Anyone else on the TriMet? The dash, shouldn't call it the TriMet, the Lane District also, the dash threes.
Mr. Chairman, I know that LTD is represented here today and would express their support. I don't know if you need to hear from them, but I know they support the bill.
I don't feel any, but good. We're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the dash sevens, Mr. Phillips, would you like to come up and bring whomever you'd like to have talk about these with you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Phillips. We'll be brief. Today, I'm representing the group of companies, Smart Growth Coalition. That's Columbia Sportswear, Louisiana Pacific, Intel, Nike, Schnitzer Steel, Tektronix, Geldwin, Cascade Corporation, Goldendale Electric, Monaco, Coach, Electric Scientific Industries, FEI, Lithia Motors, Bear Creek Corporation, Greenbrier, Precision Cast Parts, KinderCare, Les Schwab Tire, and TriQuint. That's part of the coalition. The only reason I read through it is that is a group of private or publicly traded businesses throughout the state of Oregon. We are very strongly in support of the Dash 7 amendments. In addition, we have the AEA and the Oregon Metals Council and the Oregon Bankers Association in favor of this. Clearly, moving to a single sales, just in the time this bill, since it's passed the House and has been in your committee, Wisconsin has adopted the single sales. So this is would keep us competitive by removing the penalties for payroll and property in the corporate tax apportionment structure. The R&D tax credit, Mr. Chair, that you've amended in is very similar to the bill that the three of us and on behalf of our clients introduced. Changing the definition is critically important to keeping us competitive on a national scale. It is the growth industry for Oregon, not only for manufacturing, which I predominantly represent, but the high-tech community, community, the sportswear community, which Oregon is has a growing dominance in that market, and the natural resource community. So those entities are very, very interested and supportive of broadening the definition as the Dash 7 amendments do, as well as moving the cap from 500 to a million in 05. Our bill was a slightly more aggressive than that, but given the world in which we live, we're just very pleased that this will have an opportunity to move through the process and get to the governor's desk. With that, I think all three of us would be willing to answer any questions you might have, but we certainly support the Dash 7 amendment.
Anything to add?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Ringo.
I just had a question. I think this was discussed last time. The OTIM estimated that this would create 20 jobs. And there was some testimony saying, you know, why are we doing this for 20 jobs? And I think your response was, well, that you just disputed that estimate. And I was wondering if you could just discuss that, what you think might be the realistic estimate and why we should go with that and not OTIM.
Well, the OTIM model went farther, and I think it would be more appropriate for you to have Mr. Warner up to address this, but let me address OTIM. If you read it in its totality, there's a lot more benefits that come from this than just the 20 jobs. And in fact, start unpeeling that envelope a bit, and you'll find that in every other state within 3 years, there's been a positive return on investment and a job growth. If you look at the major companies that are looking from an international and national competitive basis and looking to put them on fair footage, if you will, with the Midwest and other parts where they can have their distribution centers and other things, it really balances out far more than the 20 jobs. The OTIM model, as you may remember, Mr. Chair and Senator Ringo, was one that I pushed very hard for the state to adopt. But it isn't. You've got to look at the total economic impact of all the variables that are encouraged. And I think Mr. Warner could walk you through that. I would just tell you that in every other state, including this state, the entities that are really pushing hard for a balanced competitive system, removing impediments, there is no justification for having an impediment for increased payroll and increased property. You want your entities to hire more people and build more property. So that's removing those puts you in an inherently better position. The 20 jobs, I think that was really taken far out of context.
Thank you.
Senator Stark.
Thank you. Just to kind of a follow-up on that question, one of the members of your coalition has talked about moving their corporate headquarters. I don't know that we pass this bill or don't pass this bill, whether that decision will hinge on that or not. But can you talk a little bit about what it means to the passage of this bill to Oregon keeping those headquarters in state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, Oregon has a huge problem. Everybody is aware of that. We're our highest unemployment and the lowest job creation. And I would argue that it's the second of those two statistics that we should be most concerned with. What the lead-in to that in every other economy and economic model shows that corporate headquarters bring you a variety of things. Job creation, charitable donations, a whole variety of things. The specific that you ask is the LP Corporation. I'd rather take it in last year or last session I was in front of you and had a major Fortune 500 company as a part of our coalition. It was bought out. Right or wrong, that's not the point. It's gone now. And you see corporate decisions being made out of state. Those are things now we're left with one Fortune 500 corporate headquarter in the state of Oregon. That is a very bad sign based on population and everything else for this state. We should have a minimum of four, possibly five. So if you look at it from a corporate headquarter recruitment standpoint, decisions aren't made overnight to leave or come. And people said, why are you willing to accept not going to 100% right now, but phasing it in? Because corporate decisions are made at a minimum of 18 months and usually about 36 months to build facilities and buy, acquire, and things of that nature. This will set forth a signal that Oregon is truly interested in having its corporate headquarters being competitive. And I think that will address corporations like the LPs and the Willamettes.
Jim, can you talk a little bit about an expanding startup that is hiring and expanding and increasing jobs, and how the R&D is really more targeted at that company than one of the Fortune 500s that Mr. Phillips mentioned?
Right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, well, the bill does two things in, as far as the existing R&D tax credit. One, it does change the allowable cap beginning a couple of years down the road, and also broadens the definition. I think most of the companies that I represent within AEA probably fall within the existing definition. So I think the additional cap is probably more important in the sector that I represent. But I want to say that despite all the gloom and doom that we've kind of generated about ourselves this session here in Oregon, there's exciting things going on. I mean, this legislature is poised to, partly through your work, Mr. Chair, this concept of the Signature Research Center, exciting new thing for Oregon. I mean, I really think we are poised on an economic recovery, and I think I agree with Mr. Phillips that we know the next year or two are still going to be tough, and the bill that you all are going to vote on here in a few minutes, that represents, by my envelope calculations, about $215 million of new business taxes in Oregon over the next 2 years. We're not up here yelling about that. I mean, we know that you have to do something to get out of this, not just to get out of this building, but to balance the budget and provide the services that Oregonians need and desire. So, I think it's marrying these two concepts. It's marrying the concept of belt tightening and people chipping in something over these next 2 years to get through this crisis, with sending some signals far down the road that our economic development department can use to help market Oregon for that recovery. It's not going to happen overnight, but we hope we can be able to point to people. We're not just raising taxes. We're raising taxes and providing some long-range incentives for future economic development. I think it's sort of what we've been saying all session. You can do both. I mean, you can get through a hard time by asking everybody to contribute something, and you can start planning for the future. Otherwise, we throw up our arms, and I guess that's the debate you're going to have here in a few minutes, and I wish you best of luck with it.
Thank you very much. Questions, Barry?
Are we ready for the motions, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on the dashboard amendment.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, they have not been presented. And I wondered if any of these three gentlemen could tell me what the next big thing is going to be.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferriero, we're not supportive of the Dash 4 amendment, so I don't think we'd be the ones to speak to it. We like the Dash 7 amendments.
Mr. Chairman, the next big thing in Oregon is a mystery, and basic research could be taking place in food technology, manufacturing, forest products research, agricultural production, transportation. I mean, who would have imagined the segue? Well, somebody did. But I'm sure it wouldn't have fit in this category. West Nile virus is decimating the animal population. Somebody comes up with pet bedding that repels mosquitoes, is going to make a pretty good mark. But Mr. Chairman, I guess my thought was that by taking the sideboards off of some of those issues, you'd have a better shot at attracting the basic and applied research that would turn into something of significant value for Oregon.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Senator Ferrioli is absolutely correct. We totally agree with him, and that's why those identical language are in the Dash 7 amendments, and we want them adopted.
I see that clause on lines 13 through 17. Mr. Chairman, proving my point.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Unbelievable. The panel agrees with the Senate. That's the first. Senator Hannan.
Ready to go to work session?
I think we are. We're in work session. Any further discussion before we begin to work?
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 2 amendments. You want to take them all one lump sum?
One at a time.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 2 amendments, which is the Longview Fiber amendments.
Senator Hannan has moved the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3183. Discussion.
Sure.
Senator Metzger.
Just for clarity, because we have a lot of different amendments that do different things, I want to make sure that they amalgamate together. So, because this one deletes the original bill and adding it to, is that coherent with all, as we add all the pieces together? Will this still all work with the intent of the chair to put all of the elements together?
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to that.
Senator Hannan.
Actually, staff and legislative council will go through with all the amendments and make sure they all adhere to the proper statute amendments that they fit within the contents of the bill.
Okay, so
if we do the twos, the threes, and the sevens, you'll have
them together. We still have all the elements.
R and D, right. And you can have the center hand and slog you five.
Okay, thank you.
Chair, please.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye.
Is it aye? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I would now move the -3 amendments. This is the TriMet and Lane Transit District amendment.
Thank you. Senator Hannon has moved the -3 amendments to House Bill 3183. Discussion. Here.
Aye.
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 There's an aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I would now move the -7 amendments, the research and development technology amendments.
Senator Hannon has moved the -7 amendments, which pertain to R&D and single cells technology. Any discussion? Tara, please.
No.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, I would now move House Bill 3183 as amended out to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon has moved House Bill 3183 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I'll be opposing the motion, the bill. I'm amazed, Mr. Chair, frankly, that a person that's been involved in budget negotiations as you have for the last 3 weeks would be contemplating further tax breaks. The notion that somehow these aren't as bad because they're moved into future biennia is the kind of thinking that's really contributed to the problem that we have right now. A lesser version of this deal in the 2001 legislature created a loss of $62 million already in the upcoming budget, which is enough to fund 4 school days for every kid in the state. The new income tax breaks approved in 99 and 2001 were another $43 million, which was enough to restore Project Independence and cover about 3,000 pregnant women and newborns in the Oregon Health Plan. And grant some opportunity grants for higher education students. So I just think this is so wrong-minded at this time, and especially in light of what we're doing in higher education, for instance. You know, you have the high-tech people here demanding engineering programs and support for higher education, and meanwhile we're ripping away scholarships for kids, and we're increasing the tuition at the University of Oregon by 33% over the next year. So I think this is unconscionable. And the other point I want to make is that you create a different set of winners and losers. So what you're going to do is cut taxes for 3,700 exporting companies, and for companies that sell most of their products in Oregon, you're going to add to their taxes. That seems to me to be an obscene form of economic development.
Further discussion? Tara, please call the roll.
No.
Aye.
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 Is an aye. Motion carries. I will carry the bill, and we are adjourned. Thank you.